So I was listening to the Mental Illness Happy Hour, and I was standing in a mall in Vietnam. And I remember thinking to myself as I was listening to this podcast, I am so glad I'm not alone. If you don't know, the Mental Illness Happy Hour, it's hosted by TV personality Paul Gilmartin, who is honestly probably can be titled as like the OG GOAT of mental health podcasting. His podcast, Mental Illness Happy Hour, has been on forever. I know if I said that, he would start laughing and be like, "You are making me out to be older than I am." But it was really one of the first podcasts I remember listening to. And when I was sitting in, I was walking around this mall, and then I ended up in the food court, and I was sitting there getting ready to head to the airport to get on a flight. And it really just struck me. I was like, man, the things this guy talks about, the depression, the anxiety, the medication, the suicide, all the things about the mental health challenges that we face as humans, just made me feel so connected, so human, and so protected. And as I was listening, I had this conversation with this incredible doctor, this family medicine physician named Rachel Reinhart Taylor. And she was talking about her incredible journey through religious trauma. And you may remember, if you've listened to the show at any scope, I grew up in the Mormon religion, and I suffered a lot of religious trauma. And it's a crazy story, something we'll get into more in the future. And she was talking about her experiences of going through and having to deal with rebuilding her identity through the pain, through the suffering, through the hurt. And it made me think about this other show that I was listening to. It's called Cheaper Than Therapy with Vanessa Bennett and Danae Logan. And their mission to help people really understand what it's like from an in-depth psychology perspective to be able to heal and whatever that is. And they help people in unearthing the limiting beliefs and behavioral patterns that hold them back. Because like Paul and like Rachel, Danae and Vanessa have had to do the same for themselves. And in today's podcast, the compilation episode with these four amazing people, we are going to explore what it really truly means to find your identity after trauma, to discover who you are after abuse, and to be able to really lock in with certainty, with love, with kindness, and with power who it is that you choose to be. I'm very excited about this episode because these are some of my favorite people in the world. And I hope that you'll listen to this with open minds. I know that it's hard sometimes when people are explaining how you go through the healing process and they talk about stepping into the new identity and the fear associated with it. And I want you to reach out and get support for that. If you feel like, man, I hear these people, I listen to the podcast all the time, but I still feel stuck. I feel like I can't go to the next level. I feel like I haven't really wrapped my head around this. I want you to reach out to me directly. I'm always here to help you. And you can either email me at michaelthinkunbrokenpodcast.com, or you can DM me on Instagram at michaelunbroken. I am here. I am available for you. And most importantly, if I can't help you, I will help you find someone who can. And I think that these four amazing human beings you're about to hear from today could potentially be one of those people. And so without further ado, my friends, let's get into the show. You're listening to the Think Unbroken podcast, and I'm your host, Michael Unbroken. I'm an author, speaker, coach, and advocate for adult survivors of childhood trauma and abuse. In this podcast, you will learn how to transform your trauma into triumph, turn breakdowns into breakthroughs, and go from victim to being the hero of your own story.
You can learn more at thinkunbrokenpodcast.com. And of course, check us out on Apple Podcasts and Spotify at Think Unbroken Podcast.
We all know what we're supposed to be doing. However, it takes a catalyst or a stimulus for us to actually move towards what that thing was or is. And so what I'd love to know, Paul, is like, did you have that moment? Was there a catalyst for massive change in your life? And what has been the biggest difference about the understanding of who you believe you are since that moment?
Well, the original catalyst was not wanting to commit suicide. I could see that my life on paper was great. I was hosting this TV show. I was making good money. I had time to spend it. I had my health, my physical health, my friends. Why was I thinking about killing myself 50 times a day? Well, I can look back now and say it's because my spirit was dead, but because all I cared about was myself. I wasn't feeding my spirit. The second epiphany or launching point was the fear of living the rest of my life without knowing true intimacy in a relationship. I could have intimacy in platonic relationships with people, but when it came to romantic relationships, you can only get so close. And I was able to realize, it's probably related to my mom overwhelming me with her needs and a fear of being suffocated. And I learned that, well, that the tool isn't putting up an iron wall to keep you away from everybody. It's getting better at understanding who you open the door for and how much you open the door. And it's a lot of trial and error. And so today I don't allow toxic people in my life. And that's been huge for me. So those were the two big catalysts in changing. But I had to be looking into a deep, dark hole to be willing to do the work to do that, because I don't like doing work. And I don't like going back into the icky memories, the icky feelings, the shame of ways that I've acted. But it's been necessary for me to begin to put together a little bit of humility and to be willing to do the reading and the writing and, you know, to read books, a therapist suggests, you know, to share my secrets with somebody in my support group.
In that, I hear massive, massive vulnerability. And I would argue that it's probably the most important trait that one develops. I will say that I do not believe it's inherent to people who come from traumatic backgrounds.
No, but telling people that come from trauma to be vulnerable is like saying to a person that's just run out of a burning building, the very thing you need is back in that burning building.
That is the greatest analogy I've ever heard in my life. Yes, you're spot on, Paul. For the people who are listening to this and they're just like besides themselves in this moment, because I'm one of them in real time having this conversation, and they're like, okay, what do I do? Like, what do I really do? Like, I hear these guys are talking. This has gone through my head a million times. Life feels like a disaster. Like, what do they do, Paul? Where do you start?
Well, if you are actively suicidal and you feel like you're making a plan or on the verge of making a plan, please call the suicide hotline. Do not reach out to a non-professional as your sole source of support, because you won't get the full help that you need. And it's not fair to them to feel like they've got to keep you alive. That's a lot to put on somebody. That doesn't mean you're a burden. It just means that you deserve a larger support network. The very thing that you struggle over and the thing that you want to hide is probably the very thing that is going to connect you to your next group of close friends. and there is trial and error in it, what's really important is to just keep going, to just keep trying different things. I have tried so many things in the last 20 years. I've probably tried 25 different meds. You know, my psychiatrist finally, we were able to dial in a combination of meds that works for me. This is the first fall in God knows how long that my depression, you know, hasn't felt like Elvis entering a stadium. Hope is so hard when you've been kicked in the teeth a lot of times, when you've had failure after failure after failure. But being around as long as I've been, I'm almost 60, I'm 59 years old, I can tell you the greatest things in my life wouldn't have happened if I hadn't experienced failure previous to it.
Yeah. And I'm right there with you. And every time I fail, I just look at my life and go, cool, I learned a lesson. And I've tried all the modalities, you name it, I've tried it. I spent all the money, I did all the things. And I am going to wholeheartedly agree with you that if you can do that thing, whatever it is that you need to do to give yourself the strength to face your fear of just going one more day, tomorrow might be the day everything's different. Mm-hmm. Like Sharon Lecter, who is an entrepreneur, she co-wrote multiple books, but she has a book called 3 Feet from Gold. And the idea of that book is very simple. You might be 3 feet from that thing that you've always wanted. One more day, one more minute, one more action. And I think that's the reality of life. Like if you find that reason to keep going, which for me has been being of service, right? You find that thing, being a better brother, being a better communicator, a leader, a speaker, all those things. And for you, it may be, you know, being a better mom, being the best entrepreneur or business owner or whatever that thing is, but finding that reason to hold on will forever change everything for you. And as someone who's attempted suicide myself, I can tell you right now, like the greatest moment of my life was like being able to come through the other side of that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's not hard, because it's hard. Some days suck. Some days I don't want to do this. Some days I want to lay in bed and eat chocolate cake and do nothing. But I ask myself, who do I need to be today? And if I were a person who's kind to myself, what would I need to do?
If one of the reasons why, and thank you for sharing that, and I agree wholeheartedly. And one of the things that I would have never imagined I would get out of support groups is other people seeing the change in me before I could see it myself. And them helping me to see myself through their eyes. A psychiatrist, after I cut contact with my mom, which is a very long process and not simple and the most painful thing I've probably ever been through, my psychiatrist said to me, I just want to commend you on looking into the jaws of the monster. He said, so many people run from that monster, that the monster of childhood trauma, without ever stopping to heal. You know, your feelings won't kill you, but running from them might.
So here I am in my life, heading into the second half almost, and looking at it and going, well, how the hell do you have a less stressed and more carefree life? Are there some, like, in what I would call incredibly practical ways that you think that as trauma survivors, people can step into that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So I have a bleeding heart. I am also very Irish, as you might be able to tell from the little ginger, my ginger hair and my very pale skin. The idea is that we can make these changes without, my ideal is to make all of these changes kind of without medications or supplements or things that are not available to the populations that need help the most, really. I have a bleeding heart, and it started, I have a bleeding heart for underserved populations. So it, it really came to my attention that while medical missions are amazing, I love doing the medical work. Sometimes, you know, you'll give medications and they don't have follow-up. They don't have another doctor. They have no way to get the medication again. There's no ride. You know, this is what I'll also repeated, you know, when I was working on reservations here, you know, in our own country, you know, there's so many populations that just don't have a money to pay for it, which I don't think is like ridiculous. You know, I had a stroke and was furloughed from work and I couldn't afford therapy and stuff at that time. So, you know, and through medical school, I mean, I was on, you know, Medicaid and all of that. So it's not absurd to think that literally any of us could at any point in our lives not have access to these things that cost so much money, including, you know, therapy and, like I said, Western medicine, all of that. So I really, really, really have become interested, you know, in the last, it's probably been now 12 years since my first medical mission. I'm so interested in how can populations, what does the science say about how populations can optimize their own health without needing someone else's help, like basically without spending money. So there are a few things. So I don't know if you're familiar with neuroplasticity. Neuroplasticity is when we can create new neuron connections in our brain or new connections in our brain. And a lot of times this might happen with injury. So for example, I had that little stroke and I had the opportunity to kind of rebuild that. And actually, when people exercise any kind of cardio, it increases their ability to kind of remodel their brain, that neuroplasticity. And then there are other things, there are certain types of meditation, and you can remodel your outlook. Basically, you know, you have to do things that are gonna, I like the word potentiate, but basically tell your brain we're changing now. And then when you're doing those, you have to be very, very, very mindful that you are focusing on the way you want your outlook to become. So there's also, there are a few, so as far as neuroplasticity, there's some medication, like there's ketamine is, by the way, I do not endorse using that off the street, but please don't do that. It's very dangerous. But you can. But there are like infusion centers that are used, and physicians overlook people who have PTSD and anxiety and depression and things like this to help them literally remodel their brain. There was a Yale study recently that showed psilocybin. That is the like active ingredient in magic mushrooms. Again, exercise caution with this advice, but that does cause your brain to say we're remodeling now. And then again, you know, there's different types of breathing, meditation exercises, and things that in meditation you can increase. There's a part of your brain stem that's gray matter that helps you. When you do this meditation, it helps that area develop, and that area is helpful in controlling emotions and making decisions in high stress situations. So, you know, it's not like, well, my life sucked and now I'm forever. It's like, okay, look, the science is showing that you can remodel this and you can fix it. And then if you use your neuroplasticity to change your outlook, then your life starts feeling more carefree. You can see things. I can see my stroke as a detour to get to a place where my life is going to be better, instead of, oh, this was the worst thing ever. I hate, you know, I'm screwed forever. What if I have another one? What if I blah? I hate my life. You know, you have to actively choose that, though. And it is not, I mean, it is, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. You have to choose that all the time. I think, you know, I mean, you talk about it all the time. Every time you make that decision, but you can make that decision, help remodel your brain by meditating, by exercising, and then knowing your brain is in remodel mode. So you're going to choose differently than before. And that's all free and accessible to everybody.
Yeah, and that's such a great point. And it, so much of this does really start with the way that you're thinking, the way you're talking to yourself, the way that you're allowing yourself to be in the world. And I recognize it's difficult, right? Especially when you're inundated with the ideas that other people have put on you of who you are or who you should be. And then you reiterate that into yourself and into the world. And then suddenly you look at your life and you're like, how did I get here? And it's a trial by fire to pull yourself out. But, you know, you talk about one thing I think is really interesting that I'd love for you to dive into. And I have gotten pushback on this. And so I will preface this that I will say I have gotten quote unquote canceled because of saying this before. And this is the idea that anybody can be healthy if they're willing to do the work. And I fully believe that. I'm not, and look, I'm not smart. I'm not better than anyone. I don't have any college degrees. Like, I didn't even graduate high school on time. I've destroyed my life and built it back up. I believe that it takes the same amount of effort to build your life as it does to destroy your life. And I want to know your thoughts on this, because I think that sometimes it helps to come from another voice. But why do you think that anyone can be healthy if they're willing to do the work?
Yeah, well, I mean, that is definitely, it's hard for doctors to get canceled. I think because they need us so bad. But, you know, I'm either essentially loved or hated by my patients. More loved, thank goodness, but sometimes very much hated. And you know, a lot of this is that same, you know, belief. You know what? I will tell people, you know, you can get there. You can be healthy if you want to be. And I think that really for me, saying these things, I can back it up with the science. I mean, neuroplasticity, I just told you about, you can lower your blood pressure by meditating every day. Like, that's a shown scientific study. You can lower your risk of heart attack and stroke by meditating. And there are certain types of meditation, and these are all studied. You know, your blood sugar gets better when you meditate. You know, and I get it. Everyone has a reason why they can't, or they're different, or they blah, blah, blah. But honestly, I've seen a lot of bodies. I treat a lot of patients. I did surgery, ER, and now I'm primary care. There's no body I have seen that I'm like, no, this wouldn't help them. Never, never, ever, ever have I seen that before. I don't care how sick you are. You can improve by doing things. By especially changing your mindset. I mean, it's chronic pain, arthritis. You know, I can literally name 100 diseases that I've worked with and revert. Well, maybe I can't name 100 off the top of my head, but there are lots that I've worked with that I have gotten able to reverse, at least in part. This is not, you know, some woo-woo, whatever. I mean, this is science. And it's all... you know, again, it's in my book. And if anyone needs a book and they can't pay for it, please reach out to me. I'm happy to, we can figure something out. I can send you one. But, you know, I wrote that book. I wasn't looking to be rich. I wasn't looking to like be super famous. You know, that is the book of all of the ways you can be healthy for free that I knew at the time. I know more now too. So, I would be shocked if I saw any patient that actually, again, hunkered down and worked with me, that didn't have a reversal of their symptoms. That's just, I literally cannot think of any reason why that wouldn't happen. And you know, we can work with it. If you're a busy single mom, I get how that is. We can help you. If you feel like you don't have the money, that's why I did this for free, accessible to anyone. You can access it from anywhere. You know, I have found ways. I mean, in the book, I talk a lot about what, you know, this patient, a bus driver, he works 12-hour shifts. He's like, I never have time to get up and walk. So we got this thing where he like got off the bus and did like 10 jumping jacks, you know, at every stop. And, you know, it was fun. And, you know, oh, I can't afford to eat healthy. Okay, we're going to do one cup of leafy greens, put that in a bag. Make 7 bags of those, you know, 7 bags of spinach on Monday. And if you just end up putting it in your mouth and having to chew down the spinach like a rabbit, that's fine. That's how we're going to do it. In this case, blood pressure came down. We reversed his hypertension, got him off of 3 medications. We got, you know, he had a family history of diabetes, you know, which is true, can be a precursor, but that doesn't mean you have to have it. We reversed his, I think he was still on 1 medication. We took him off of 2. That's 5 medications he didn't need anymore by making really easy lifestyle changes. And really just, I think it comes with citing the science and saying, look, here's the deal. This is what will happen. This is what will change in your body when you make these tiny changes. And again, this is not expensive. This is meant on purpose to be free changes.
When they're in that and they're trying to start from scratch and they find themselves with you, like, how do you do that? Right. Mm. Like, what is it when your whole identity has been built on this idea of I need to have all these things and have all these experiences and ultimately show up in this kind of way in the world to have validity and validation and love, compassion, worth, all those things. And you come to find out like that's not really how the world works. And it's like, is existential crisis for you? How do you start to rebuild in that?
Mm. Well, I think a lot of it has to do with what Danae was saying about pulling back. Like, I think a lot of it has to do with pulling back and being able to see the cultural shift and how that actually has impacted how we feel about ourselves and almost like seeing your place in it. And for a lot of people, I'm just going to pause on that. Okay. For a lot of people, they're actually not even aware of that, right? They have no idea the kind of impact that has actually had on their sense of self, like I said, on their happiness. And so first and foremost, it's actually like restructuring and giving them new lenses to look at things through. And then I think the other thing is helping them rewrite their story, right? So it's helping to reclaim power where they feel like they have none. So many of us, I think, grow up in a very like victim mentality or a victim space. And again, I don't want to blame culture entirely, but I do think there's a cultural component to that. And so I think rewriting story is really important. I think getting in there and helping them with tangible tools, actually. I mean, this is where I would talk tangible tools around building self-esteem, around building purpose, around being able to say no, around getting to choose what their life is going to look like or not look like. And sometimes it takes a rock bottom to do that. But I think that is, I think the most common scenario I see in therapy.
Yeah. What are those consequences? Because I think it's often, especially in this society, a very forest for the trees kind of thing.
Yeah.
So what does that actually look like in the world that we're in right now?
I think there's so many ways that shows up. Certainly, if we think about living in a society where we have completely rejected the feminine, you know, everything we are taught from so young is that the feminine is has a negative connotation, that, you know, don't throw like a girl, don't be a girl, you're crying like a girl. All of these like energies of like the feminine being unnecessary, silly, childlike,
weak.
where, you know, what we have done is really disconnect from so much of our connection to our intuition and our ability to be vulnerable and our ability to connect to the source energy from which we come from. And ultimately, what the outcome of that is, a society that is completely disconnected from Mother Earth to the point where we are destroying it, right? And I think I do a lot of work with couples where I see this show up in that, like, we don't know how to meet one another, because it's like everybody is sort of fighting with each other to be the alpha. Women as a society, I would say collectively, are so much in like really wounded masculine energy, because what I believe happened was, as we had the rise of the feminist movement, which, I mean, we're so grateful for that. But what happened was, instead of sort of the feminist movement being about celebrating, reclaiming feminine energy that had been disregarded by a patriarchal culture for so long, what we did was decide feminism is going to look like women attempting to replicate wounded masculine energy. And so many of us as women were sort of raised to believe what I need to do to be equal, quote, to men in society, to have equal rights and a seat at the table, is to act like wounded masculine energy. Mm-hmm. And that's actually not serving any of us. But what I see play out in terms of couples dynamics so often is that women are so deep in wounded masculine energy, which there will inevitably, I find, be a polarity created just naturally between two people. And what ends up happening is men in relationships with women, and obviously I'm speaking very heteronormatively in this context, end up showing up in these relationships in really wounded feminine energy, which repels the women in their lives. And I found this fascinating once I came to this realization, because, you know, I was married for so many years, not really understanding, like unable to put my finger on what is the difficulty in our dynamic, what makes it so hard for us to keep this energy of attraction and longing and all of these things that, you know, in healthy polarity we have. But what I find is this rejection of the feminine, this inability to integrate feminine energy for both masculine and feminine energies in a healthy way really means that we are both operating in wounded polarities.
Thank you so much for listening to Think Unbroken. Please share this episode with someone who could use it and help us move forward in our mission of ending generational trauma in our lifetime. And if you would, please take 5 seconds to pop on iTunes or Spotify, hit that 5-star, leave a review, and you can also reach out to us on social at Michael Unbroken or at Think Unbroken. And of course, you can check out our YouTube channel at Think Unbroken. Thank you for being a part of Unbroken Nation, my friends. And until next time, be unbroken.